Corinthians 3. Brandon walks us through the first few verses where Paul calls the Corinthians immature. He basically says, hey, I came to you and I wanted to treat you as mature. I wanted to give you solid food, but I couldn't because of the fights among you. The Corinthians are indeed saved. We do know that, especially because Paul refers to them as brothers in verse 1. But they're being held back by their jealousy and divisions among each other. In regards to who they follow, which is Paul or Apollos in this case. So we'll be looking at the next few verses today on the journey as a whole through 1 Corinthians, which may last for the next 3 years, we don't know. Because we're only looking at verses 5 through 17 today, and then Owen will pick up next week. So Brandon, I believe, is doing a wedding in Texas today, and so that's where he is. Anyway, so we wish him the best of luck. So let's check it out real quick. 1 Corinthians 3, 5 through 17. I'll read it. What, after all, is Apollos? And what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God, who makes things grow. The one who plants and the one who waters have one purpose, and they will each be rewarded according to their own labor. For we are co-workers in God's service. You are God's field, God's building. By the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation as a wise builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should build with care, for no one can lay a foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. If anyone builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, which are not like rubies and diamonds, they're like marble and granite, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, their work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each person's work. If what has been built survives, the builder will receive a reward. If it is burned up, the builder will suffer loss, but yet will be saved, even though only as one escaping through the flames. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in your midst? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person. For God's temple is sacred, and you together are that temple. Pray real quick. Well, God, thanks so much for this book. Thanks so much for the opportunity to learn, God, from people before us. Thank you that you desire to use us in your plans. God, thank you that you want us to mature. God, we are new creations, but we are seen as babies in that new creation. God, we need to grow up. And so I pray that you just speak with us today and help us learn what we need to. I also pray that you bless Brandon and the wedding that he's a part of. Thanks so much for just marriage, God, as a whole. So we commit the time to you in your son's name. Amen. So in this passage, I believe Paul is talking about the responsibility placed on believers to not only find new believers, but to also build up existing believers, really all believers. It's a shared responsibility among us. And I think Paul is saying that there's a right and a wrong way to do it. I want to communicate something up front, which is, and I'll probably communicate it at the end, and that is God is the one doing all the work. He's the builder, he's the one refining us, doing amazing things, but that being said, I think Paul in 1 Corinthians 3 says that we get to be part of that equation. God desires to be co-laborers with us, and that he's got plans for us as we fulfill his master plan, in a way, to build his kingdom. That means that we play a crucial role in the building up of new believers and immature believers and really anyone along the way. So for me personally, I understand Paul a lot better when I apply it to my current situation. Peter said that Paul's writing can sometimes be confusing. I believe that to be true. And so as I read this verse, wondering about stones and gold and silver and building stuff and escaping with only my life, what in the world he's talking about. So I rewrote it in the SLT, the Sean Leone translation. And think of it like an amplified commentary ESV, SLT, you know, of everything together here. And I'm going to read through what I think it's saying just to bring us all to the same page. So anyway, here we go. Why do you claim to follow Brandon Pullen and Sean Leone when Brandon and Sean are open about saying how they follow Christ? And not only Christ, but they also say they learn and grow from other mature believers, such as John Meyer, Greg Crisman, Owen McGeehan, Francis Chan, and others. If you claim to be proud that you follow Brandon or Sean, why wouldn't you want to put yourselves under the people that Brandon and Sean learn from and grow from? And that way, you would remove the middleman and learn straight from the source. Brandon and Sean are like anyone else in the body of believers. They are servants sent to help some of you find the Lord and to help all of you continue to grow in your relationship with the Lord. Now, we are indeed leaders sent by God, and by His grace, we have different skills and resources to help Him with His bigger plan of building a kingdom. Now, although we have had large impacts in many of your lives, please don't neglect the benefit that others in this room have also given to you. We are simply walking out our own convictions and have walked through our own messes to bring you to greater depths in your relationship with God. Now, it doesn't matter if Brandon helped you get saved and if Sean discipled you, or vice versa, because Brandon and Sean are unified for the same goal. They both want to see you saved and growing in your sanctification. In fact, Brandon has a greater sense of peace, knowing that he can't answer every question, or that because he isn't around the students as much, that Sean can help out. And Sean has a greater sense of peace, knowing that Brandon invests into the community side of the church and helps them grow, especially since Sean isn't even to some of their stages of life. But let us not forget, people of Desert Sin, God is the one who first moved your hearts and revealed the mystery that is no longer a mystery to you, and thus adopted you into His family as sons. Brandon and Sean have just been messengers. God has given us different tasks, and He'll reward each of us accordingly so long as we continue to help build each other up. We submit ourselves to Christ's will, so rest assured, regardless of which one of us you talk to or get advice from, even if that advice is different from the other, we follow Christ, and so we'll point you to Him. God has really blessed us both by revealing Himself to Brandon in college and bringing Sean to Desert Sin several years ago. To be honest, we both learned some of what we know far later in life than many of you did. However, God has really shown Himself in our lives and personally discipled us in many ways, as all of you know. We both feel confident and have taught all of you the basics of Christianity. Because of that, if we were no longer to be involved in your life, we trust that God would bring others into your life to build on what we had set. They could build on our foundation of the basics. And even if we don't leave, we want to give you the freedom to talk to others in this room and allow them to bring new things into your life as well. To be honest, if we are tasked with growing each of you into the fullness of Christ, we will fail, as it would take a lifetime of just sitting with each one of you, because we would need to walk with you through every season of your life to be able to provide encouragement and correction along the way. But thanks be to God, we are not tasked with walking each of you into the fullness forever. We are proud to be part of your life here and now, but we need you to ask others for help, because your growth needs to be a shared responsibility. Let it be known, and let us announce it from stage, though, that if any of you in this room want to invest in someone else, you will need to give an account to the Lord. Give extra thought and care to what you teach each other, as you can do more harm than good if you teach foolishness. God is building up our church as a whole, and you are one of the construction workers. But if you lay your 2x4s incorrectly, or if you don't do a proper weld, the building will collapse. And so it also is with the building of believers. I'm not saying that we as your leaders have all the right answers, especially in comparison to others. But I do want you to be aware that it's a big task, and it should not be taken lightly to build up God's children. Do not pin each of your disciples against each other just because they give different advice, but allow the Spirit to bring conviction as you hear advice. And if you are the one giving advice to another believer, only speak what is profitable and what the Lord would deem as important and helpful for their growth. Even though the task is large, though, God gives you grace. He is the master builder. So if you give wrong advice or even teach foolishness unknowingly, you don't have to worry about losing your sonship or your place in God's family. Because God is faithful and just, He will give out rewards to those who teach others what is profitable, and He will not give rewards to those who teach what is not profitable. Again, don't take this as permission to do nothing, as that would be reacting out of fear. Take this as an opportunity to lean in closer and to learn what is indeed profitable and helpful to teach to the other believers in this room. God wants all of us to grow into the fullness of Christ, so He'll keep watch over all of us. He wants his spirit to dwell in each of us and show us that our unity is better than our independence. He delights in using broken, redeemed people to help other broken people. Best of luck and finish strong. The SLT. Anyway, let's sit with this for a minute. What did you hear? I'm not going to do group interaction because I'm already low on time. We talked about idolizing teachers. I doubt any of you idolize Brandon or myself, which is totally fine. But what about the YouTube teachers or the other pastors that you listen to? How about the call for everyone to invest in one another? Sort of a big claim. The idea that Brandon and I can't do it all on our own, and we not only need all of you, but we encourage it. We want help. How about the rewards and consequences that await? It tends to grab people's attention. What about the grace and the lack of burden, knowing that God's actually the one who's bringing about the change in people's lives? Here's a quick poll in the room. Do you or have you felt that you are the only one qualified to disciple someone? I often feel this. I call that pride. Or are you on the opposite side of the spectrum and you believe it's probably, I'm not qualified to do any of this? It's called fear. I want to share about one of my own experiences of being a sower and a waterer. It's a hard word to say, waterer. Many of you know Mike's background. Where's Mike? Mike! Mike's background. He got saved as a freshman about 6 years ago. And Tim and I were walking with Mike. We were doing Bible studies and topics and apologetics. And eventually we invited Mike over to my house and we asked if he wanted to receive Christ. Mike said yes that night, and he went home for the summer. When he came back from the summer, he lived with me at my house, one-on-one. I didn't have any other roommates at the time. But I admit that I was selfish when it came to watering Mike. I believe that my knowledge, techniques, and experiences were superior to those that were also investing in him. I was believing no one else could teach him as good as I could. Maybe it was an age thing, I don't know. Eventually, though, this lie was resolved in my heart, and I only felt peace with people like Timo and Alex pouring into Mike's life. But eventually, I realized I actually needed others because I wasn't skilled at everything. Who knew? I've taught Mike several great skills and pushed him to higher levels of faith. But if you ask Mike today, he'll say that he had pivotal moments in his Christian journey, not only from me, but from Mike and from Timo, amongst others. And at that time, I even had jealousy when thinking about others making more of a difference in Mike's life. But a few years back, this specific section of 1 Corinthians really spoke to me and transformed my own way of thinking to where I could see value in having multiple sowers and waterers within someone's life. And that was the way for my life as well. I didn't just have Brandon pouring into me. I had other people pouring into me. So while I'm confessing stuff up here, I want to touch on a popular lie I was believing. I think maybe some of you believe. When I first joined Desert Zen, what really struck me was Brandon's passion and others' passions to go out and share the gospel. So when growing up in my mega church, I had never really been given a call to go out and share the gospel. That was, you know, everyone else's job. But when I read the verses in Matthew 28, it seemed clear that Jesus was speaking to not only me, but others. And he said, hey, I want you to go out and do this. So we did go out, Brandon, myself, some of our college team. We watched videos. We met up. We thought through how to get better at it. We practiced our testimonies on each other, did recap. And along the way, I saw a few people get saved, which is pretty neat. Some of them here, some of them not. Like, we didn't get contact info, which I regret, but I was new at it. So anyway, I had this thought throughout the whole time while doing evangelism in the back of my head, what would happen next, like after these people got saved? Because we had only focused on this first half. Is it, or was it my responsibility to teach them everything that I knew? I mean, Matthew 28 does say that, but it's like, oh, but is it actually my responsibility to do this? Or could I give them to someone else who knew more than I did? So throughout the years at Desert Zen, and with my involvement in the well, I have flip-flopped on the two ideas, the two lies as I call them. One, that you're only building the kingdom if you're speaking the gospel. And on the other side, you're only building the kingdom if you take care of believers and help build them up and get them to the finish line. When in reality, both of these ideas are true, needed, and crucial to God's bigger plan in the kingdom. Because without doing evangelism, there would be no one to disciple. And without disciplers, we'd have a bunch of infant believers walking around, easily being tossed to and fro by the waves of culture. But as a side note, real quick, I'm not staking a flag or making a claim that you are only an evangelist or only a discipler or a waterer. I believe that not only both are valuable, but you actually play both roles throughout your Christian life. So don't leave 1 Corinthians 3 just thinking, hey, I'm either one or the other. So by God's grace, I've actually become a better evangelist because of the discipleship work that I have done in the lives of our students. As it gave me greater assurance in what I believed in working with others. And because I was seeing what I was teaching being walked out in the lives of others. I also became a better discipler as I focused on evangelism because it taught me the current issues of the age. What are people struggling with to walk through? And then I tried to build that into my discipleship curriculum. Verse 10 says someone else is building on the foundation. I think it's vague enough and specific enough to where Paul isn't saying that it has to be certain people, that it's meant to be everyone. It seems like Paul's okay with other believers coming in and investing, which is a real struggle for me. I don't know if it was for you, but I really had this strong sense of pride. Like, it needed to be me. I have all the answers. And so it's been a humbling experience in working with Mike and others to know that, man, other people can get involved here and have giftings and skills and experiences that I don't have. As I talk to people, I tend to find it's actually on the opposite side. People are more afraid to get to that point of discipleship. They're more afraid to step in and be some of the other people that I'm describing up here. But anyway, safe to assume in a room like this, everyone knows Billy Graham. If you don't, see me afterwards. He's one of the greatest evangelists of our time in regards to his reach of the world. Less people know one of his sidekicks when he began his ministry. Anyone know Dawson Trotman? Some people in the room know Dawson. So Dawson was called on by Billy to do follow-up to his crusades. He was designed and asked to help grow the new believers that had been left behind. Dawson later went on to found the Modern Day Navigators, which is a group mainly on campuses, but they meet other places. And then he died in 1956 while actually trying to save someone from drowning. But the Navigators were formed out of members of military personnel as they were getting saved and then being reassigned elsewhere. So Dawson had this burden on his heart for growing these baby Christians. He was like, man, they're coming to Christ, and then a week later they get restationed, and I don't have any chance to grow them. And so he developed the Navigators and basically designed the curriculum to teach a new believer from day one how to lead small groups, how to evangelize, how to self-feed, so that when they got sent elsewhere, they could not only fend for themselves but fend for others. And so that's why Billy called, and Billy knew of the work that he was doing. Two of the phrases that Dawson taught me: A, we need to be producing producers. What this means is we need to instill a sense of evangelism and self-feeding into the people that have just been evangelized. This has been significant in my life because I realized with Mike, in the same way that Dawson realized with the Navigators, both parts of the equation are valuable. I like how Moody says it. He says that Christians should be counted and weighed, thus inferring that there's depth here that needs to happen. It's not just a numbers game of, all right, cool, they're saved, let's move on. It's, hey, man, they're saved, and now we need to help them grow. But B, Dawson's phrase, technically it's Billy's phrase, but Dawson always quotes it. Billy says, if not you, then who? Because at first when Billy asked Dawson, hey, do you want to help with this? Dawson said, no, I'm not able to do it. And so Billy said, well, then if not you, then who? Because I need someone to do it. So this has been convicting as I think about my own follow-up and mentorships of some of the believers in my life. And the phrase open, some of them are my responsibility, meaning that, yeah, if it is me. If not me, then who? Well, there is no one else. So it is me at the moment. I can think of a few people I'm mentoring right now where I go, yeah, I just don't know if anyone else is able to jump in there. I'm sort of filling a gap. But it also opens up the idea, gives me a sense of freedom to know that there is a who back there, which is it doesn't fully rest on me. It can be other people, as I'm saying here with Mike. Practical to take away from these first few verses, because we're only on the first few verses here. Who are you actually investing into? Are you trying to add new believers to God's kingdom by sowing seed? Let's focus on this side of the room. Are you investing in each other? Are you investing in this side of the room? Because they're about to walk into the stage of life that you're in. This side of the room. The middle, you're exempt. So, this side of the room, are you investing in each other? Oftentimes what we hear is, oh, I'm just a few years older, or I'm still learning this stuff, or I don't have time for it. It's like, man, but you and an army can help out and grow someone. And are you investing in this side? There's a lot of things that you can teach them as well. Anyway, something convicting to think about. Because you all have something to share, and you all play a role in building up the body as a whole. Some of you sow, some of you water, but you are all God's garden, according to verse 9. So I find that we believe several lies when it comes to the idea of being co-laborers with God. We find several outs. Such as, I don't need to share with someone, as God can and will use someone else to share with them. Well, God is sovereign, that's true, in a way. He could use someone else anytime. Or I don't know what to say, or that they may have questions I can't answer. So it would be better to not say anything at all. But God can use anything that you say. What he can't use is your silence. Or what about, I don't have any real relationship with them. Or on the other side, I have too much relationship with this person to risk sharing the gospel with them. For me, I just go, then I'm going to live my entire relationship and life with them as a lie. Because this is a big part of my life. They need to be brought into this. Here's a few on the other side. I can't disciple that person because I don't have my own life in order. It's probably true. I just learned the topic in my own life, so I couldn't possibly teach it to others yet. Or for me, I wasn't there when that person got saved. So it's not my responsibility. It was a really elementary level of thinking. I used to think that. It's like, well, I wasn't there when they got saved, so I'm exempt from this person. But if you look at 1 Corinthians 3, which we did, Paul says that these are lies because God's the one who actually is doing the work. And that he himself and Apollos are just assigned to their tasks. He also says that others are to build on his foundation. He doesn't give any criteria or curriculum of what makes them qualified or not. He also references the grace that's been given to each of us by way of being given to him. If we're wanting to be perfect in every way and have all understanding before sharing our lives with others, we'll be waiting our entire lifetime. But we need to discuss the elephant in the room. From these verses, Paul mentions rewards and consequences, which are scary words. While we all like the idea of gaining a reward for doing good things, we probably relate more to the consequences, and thus we don't make a move out of fear for being punished. Back to Mike, in the beginning of working with Mike, I gave him some lousy advice. Paul would call it bad building material or unprofitable. It was on a number of things, including bad dating advice that Mike occasionally reminds me of. I was telling Chelsea on the car ride here, I was like, I can't believe some of the things I told that guy. Like, I would be embarrassed to say them from stage. So don't talk to Mike afterwards. Anyway, so it was on a number of things that I gave him bad advice, but how was I to know this? I look back and I go, I was totally not qualified to be mentoring and discipling this guy. Totally not qualified. But I learned so much along the way. And should I have stopped discipling Mike altogether because I gave him bad advice? I'd say absolutely not. But this is only possible because I was walking both in authority in terms of being a discipler of Mike, but I was also walking under authority of Brandon and others. There were many times where I went to Brandon and told him the advice I had given Mike, only to be met with, hey, I don't think that was good advice. And there were several times where Brandon proactively came to me and said, hey, I met with Mike and I heard that you told him this. I don't think that was good advice. Others wiser than me have referred to this as having a father in the faith, a brother in the faith, and a son in the faith. A.K.A. someone who is investing into you, someone you are running beside, and someone you are investing into. Quick questions to think about. Do you have these three in your life? If not, when and where can you get them set up? Because if you're like me, at times you are confused as to what is good and what is not good. To use Paul's language, you aren't sure when you're building with gold, silver, and stone, as compared to building with wood, straw, and hay. So it got me thinking, are there other parts of Scripture where people are corrected for their incorrect way of thinking or bad advice? A few came to mind. Peter asked Jesus at one point if he should call fire down to destroy people, and Jesus said, absolutely not. Others at one point asked Jesus if the blind man was born that way because of what his parents did. To which Jesus said, "Absolutely not. And why would you even think that?" Another time, Jesus' disciples tried casting out a demon and they couldn't do it. Jesus shows up and says, "Hey, this one can only be cast out by prayer and by fasting." In reading these, I see examples of followers of Jesus with misinformation. And they could have told that to other believers. Maybe they did, and Jesus corrected it. I don't know. Paul also makes reference in other areas of his letters of what he calls profitable speech, which is only speaking things that build others up. Don't get tripped up thinking about whether you know the good input or the bad input in someone's life. See me afterwards. So don't get tripped up thinking about whether you know the good input or the bad input. So long as you're walking under authority. Paul is clear in this passage, there definitely is bad advice that can be given. And although you won't lose your salvation over giving such advice, you also won't receive any rewards. And to Paul, rewards are a big deal. Why? Because God's building a temple, and we're the stones, and so naturally, he cares how it turns out. Thinking about giving bad input does make you think, though, and it does make me personally self-reflect. Am I just building people up by being social? By playing board games, having people over for dinner, going to sporting events, and then all these never actually talking about something spiritual. To me, that just seems like a loss. Now, maybe not every time, of course, but Paul tells us in other scriptures that we are to talk about spiritual things. Proverbs says that we can be iron that sharpens iron. Jesus says we are to be salt used for seasoning. Well, what about the things that are profitable? The things that we get rewards for? So even though I made a lot of mistakes while trying to mentor and disciple Mike, eventually, by God's grace, we figured it out and we found some of our stride. I've been able to assist Mike with several profitable or good building materials, such as finances, discerning faith decisions, solving conflict with other believers, and eventually, yes, even good dating advice. Now, when I say me and others is probably a more accurate phrase. I may have started the conversation and given my 25 cents, but others helped out along their own ways. I want to transition to a few practicals. This is a tool that's been really helpful for me in my own life. It's also been helpful when I think about discipling others. It's not exclusive to what Paul's saying when he talks about good building materials, but for the practically minded in the room, it's a helpful tool. So if you're a journaler, cue the journals. They're called the 9 F's, and no, I can't take credit for them. Someone else created them, but they are. I'll say them and then I'll re-say them. Faith, family, field, fitness, fidelity, faithfulness, fishing, finances, and fellowship. I should have probably put slides. That's all right. Again, and now a little slower and with a little extra context for each one. Things to think about in your own life or when discipling others, because I believe to be profitable, good building materials. So first is faith. How are you maturing in regards to understanding Jesus and the cross, the Spirit, forgiveness, baptism? Are you rejoicing in trials? Second one is family. How are you maturing in regards to your parenting or your children, your spouse, your own parents, and fixing some of those relationships, your extended family? Being a servant, being understanding, working through communication. Number three was your field. How are you maturing in regards to your job, your total career as a whole, education, continued education, personal strengths and weaknesses. Your fitness, your health, having a level of self-control, nutrition and exercise, all your body, soul, spirit and mind. Your weight, alcohol consumption. Next one, your fidelity, which is your purity, or your self-image. Self-control makes another appearance there. Healthy sexual relationships, your addiction or lack of addiction to pornography. Next one is your faithfulness, your humility as a whole, your obedience to God, prayer, spiritual disciplines as a whole, just generally walking in communion with God. Fishing, number 7 here, proclaiming God, loving others, exercising your spiritual gifts, your oikos, which is a Greek word for points of contact or family, those surrounded by you. So for this side of the room, students, roommates, co-workers, classmates. For this side, extended family, co-workers would probably be that. That's oikos. Making disciples, focusing on church planting or missions, whether you yourself are going or you're supporting those financially or through prayer. Number 8, your finances, avoiding debt, budgeting, being a good steward, having wise savings, which can be a tricky one because God says that he provides for us, but we should also be, in a way, providing for ourselves. So there's a balance there with how much money goes in the savings account. Your generosity towards others, tithing, helping the poor, and finally, fellowship, which is unity, love, forgiveness, walking in accountability, being part of and investing into a small group, and ultimately interpersonal relationships with each other. How do I use these in my own life and with others? Well, for my own life, it can sometimes feel like I'm plate spinning. So if you've ever seen at a carnival a plate spinner, basically, in order to get the second plate up on the stick, they need to get the first one spinning smooth enough where you can then set it aside and spend a few seconds to get the second one going. Everyone knows what plate spinning is. You know, you put the thing on and the plate's going. And so by the end of it, you know, the guy's got like 8 of them. But it's because he gets that one going, and he gets that one going, and he goes back and back and gets that one going. And I'm not going to do Brandon's whole walk-around thing for those that were here a few weeks ago. But, yeah, it can feel like plate spinning because I'm like, man, there's 9 different areas that I need to be maturing in, growing in. It's like I don't have some of those figured out, or I've just started, like on the family one. It's like, all right, well, extended family and relationships I think are all right, and things with my parents, but we've been married only a couple years. We got a kid who's a little over a year, so it's like, well, I'm just learning that one. Finances, we've spent a lot of time in the last couple years trying to pay off all of our debt. We got no debt but the house, and so I'm just still trying to figure that one out as well as we walk into the next stage. So as I look at the areas of my own personal life, I spend time thinking about the areas I need to improve with the Lord's help and with others' mentorship. Fitness. No shock to most people, but fitness is one where I'm like, I definitely need help in that area. And so as I think about just the whole and what Paul's saying here with sowing and watering, if I'm talking with Mike, I'm probably not his fitness instructor. And I'm okay with that. In fact, I hope that he could be my fitness instructor because Devin is Mike's fitness instructor. And so I look at Mike's my relationship and I go, man, there's a lot of areas I want Mike to grow in and mature in. And these are just a starting place. And I just go, man, there's something I can't teach him. I have limits and constraints, and that's okay. Because thanks be to God that other people in the body can invest into him in these areas and help him grow. And eventually, I'll be able to grow in myself. And then maybe then I can teach other people down the road about fitness. So, just an example there. But as I look into the lives of others I'm discipling, and I see how they are doing with each of these concepts, I really try to custom create something. It's just a good starting point for me. Again, it's a practical tool for those in the room that are like, hey, I want tools, I want actionables. Like, what can I walk away with? The 9 F's are a great tool. If you Google them, you'll probably find them. I doubted the first few results, but they're eventually there, and they're in a nice map, and they have all the words that I already said. But anyway, again, this list isn't exhaustive or exclusive. Paul doesn't actually mention them anywhere in 1 Corinthians 3 to state the obvious. But I believe all of them would be considered profitable. And I'm open to other ideas where you go, hey, what are some of these strong building materials that Paul's referencing? Like, how do I know I'm actually doing good in a believer's life? How do I know on the day of judgment, when the consuming fire comes and blows everything away, that some of the things that I've invested into are going to stay, and then what actually is the bad stuff? What's going to fail? And so it's a learning experience. At least it has been for me. I'm just speaking on my own experience with it. So, in closing, as a quick recap, as we're getting close here, I'll finish where I started, which is that God is the one who's actively changing lives and maturing believers. However, I wholeheartedly believe and think that Paul is saying that God wants to use us as well. We're not supposed to compare ourselves, such as the sower and the waterer, because they are equal and unified. And technically, they're nothing when looking at the work that God's actually doing in all of our lives. We have the ability, by God's grace, to step up to the plate and invest in finding new believers and walking with and discipling existing believers. If you don't have one already, find yourself a father in the faith, or a brother in the faith, or a son in the faith. I mean, it can be as simple as just walking up to someone and saying, hey, would you be one of my disciples? I'm intentionally saying that we should connect more. I want you to speak into my life. I want you to grow me in those nine F's or whatever else. And also to do it to someone else. Say, hey, I'd like to disciple you. Can I help keep you accountable and walk into some of these things? Again, it's not exclusively you. If three people come to you, great, that's fine. I have at least three or four people investing into me, and I'm investing into at least five or six on a regular basis. You're God's temple. I think that's one thing to remember. It's his final two verses here. And God wants to dwell, have his spirit dwell inside of us, and so it's important for him. He wants to see this body of believers grow up and mature so that on that final day, he can be proud of us and say, look, there they are. Like each one of them is a stone, a solid stone, and they're investing and building in the other stones, and I've given them the opportunity to work with me. And look at all the things that they're doing. So more of a final note here, a personal anecdote. If you would have told me 6 years ago that I would be spending 6 years of my life to invest in Mike, at that time, with what I knew, I probably would have said no. I would have never knocked on his door, because the thought, looking back on it, just seemed exhausting. Like, I would have been happy to knock on his door and hand him off to someone else and say, all right, cool, let me knock the next door. Like, this is the easy part. But if you ask me today, would I have done it again? I say, absolutely. I mean, it has done so many wonders for my own life and Mike's life and a lot of the other people that we have contacts with. Just to go, man, we have grown together, like we have sharpened each other. He's come to me, said, hey, you need to change things about you. More frequently, I go to him, and I say, hey, these are things that you need to change in your life. And it's been an amazing experience, and it's only happened really with, you know, one person where I've seen it from salvation through. A lot of the other people I meet with were saved pre-me, and so. Anyway, I don't know if that comes across as encouraging or deflating, but I just want to let you know that in the moment, it just always seems exhausting. It seems like you're looking at Kilimanjaro and you're like, I'm not sure I want to climb that. But when you get to the top of it and you look down, everyone's always glad that they climbed it. And so it's super rewarding. It's been super rich for me to invest in others and to be invested in. I tell Chelsea on occasion, I'm just glad to know that other men are keeping me accountable and walking me through different things. And I tell this story to the students because it's funny, but a year ago we had Greg out, and Greg's in the car with me, and he's like, you know I love you. I was like, yeah, I know. He's like, no, like I really, really like hanging with you and investing in you and being part of your life. And I'm like, yeah. So anything I say to you would be said through love. Absolutely. Bro, you need to lose some weight. I was like, hey, I'll receive that. I appreciate that. Like that you would feel close enough to me to bring me into conviction. And he goes, because it's going to be hard to get on the floor and play with your kids when you're overweight. I was like, oh man, now you're speaking my language. Like, thank you so much for being willing to cross a boundary by, you know, normal standards and say, hey, I want you to be a great father, and you can't do that when you're struggling to get up and down. And he goes one step further. This is how I know he loves me. He says, I want to help you. I used to do marathon training. And I'm just like, stop right there. But he's like, no, true story. He's like, you know, I've done marathons and half marathons, and, you know, Julie and I watch what we eat, and we're really into diet and nutrition. He's like, I'd love to be part of this. And so it actually got me inspired. And so it probably would have expired me, but anyway, I actually did lose a decent amount of weight from that time through on, but then he had a bike accident, and so he stopped keeping me accountable. Not his fault, but I put some of it back on. But, you know, I look forward to the day where I can go back to him and say, hey, thanks for starting that conversation with me. Like, fitness, one of these nine Fs, and I feel like I've really tried to walk into it, and I feel empowered to help others. So, anyway, just a little recap there for you. So, cool. I'm going to pray real quick. We're going to end. We're at 11:30. So, I was told I need to quit at 11:30. Well, God, thanks so much for the opportunity, God, just to speak up here, share some stories. God, thank you that this is near and dear to your heart, that we can be co-laborers with you, and that we can invest and we can build your temple, and we can make mistakes, and we won't have to worry about losing salvation. But God, for those of us that invest with good materials, God, there's rewards, there's extra rewards. Thank you that the burden is not one person's alone. God, thank you that, God, your body is just working as a body should. It's all investing in one another. If there are people in this room, God, that you could see being in authority or under authority, I just pray that you would reveal that. God, thank you so much for the power and transformation it's had on my life. Again, we thank you for Brandon, and just pray for the wedding that he's a part of, that you would just bless that. And thank you so much for 1 Corinthians. God, and your love and your care for those people. In your son's name, amen.